Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Our guests today are Jenny Bui Brown and James W. Brown IV, a mother and son team who have authored and illustrated the incredible new Sacred Web Tarot. Jenny is an artist, yoga teacher, devoted mother of three, and partner in life with her beloved. She considers herself to be a lifelong student of all things spiritual and liberating, and finds herself most at home on a trail by a stream, under a tree, or on a couch reading a good book. She designs healing jewelry that she sells so that she can donate her profits to beautiful nonprofit organizations. When not dwelling on the mystical nature of life, Jenny loves to ride her bike, hike, write, dance, practice yoga, listen to music, and cook delicious food for her family and friends. James is an artist whose mediums range from filmmaking to digital drawing. He's the founder of the small production company Spontaneous Productions and has spent the last few years drawing his deck, reading tarot, writing scripts, and creating original comic content. Welcome both of you to the show. I was saying before we hit record that, you know, I feel like we've kind of known each other in the virtual space for quite a while now. I feel like when I first started to talk about gender and tarot a couple of years ago, Jenny, you were kind of one of the first people that reached out to me in response to that conversation. And you shared with me that this deck was, you know, something that you were working on, and how it was really important to you to talk about gender and tarot. And so it's just been amazing to watch it come to fruition. And I was telling you that I really mean it when I say that this has become one of, if not my very favorite deck to work with. It's just so expansive and like, it's very simplistic in its design and yet it's very deep. You know, it just has a lot of directions you can go with it. It's very creative and imaginative. It's unlike anything I've seen before. And so just congratulations to you both. And thank you for making this like true work of art.
Well, thank you. You know, the whole simplicity thing is really what I've come to understand in the post-production world of this deck is this is a, from my perspective, a deconstruction of what tarot was, because I came in with very little to no tarot knowledge whatsoever. So the entire non-gender aspect was phone call where we were talking about a potential queen of, or something, the empress, or one of these very gendered, you know, labels. And I remember just saying to my mom on the phone, you know, my sibling, Liv, your child has gone by they, them for 5-6 years now. Like, why would we do that? So in that regard, I do think this is genuinely supposed to, from my perspective, the most basic aspects brought to the very, very forefront of the entire project. So,
yeah. Yeah. Jenny, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
You know, to me, it was, so I'm a former English teacher and I was writing the guidebook using traditional gendered language and it just didn't feel right. And after that conversation with James, I'm like, oh, well, then everything has to, it'll just be they, them. That's what I want to do. But I was like, is it going to work? Because I'd never written anything that way before. Mm-hmm. And the more I started to write using that language, like you use the word expansive, all of a sudden, I just remember one day, like having the leg chills, which is where I sort of feel the truth. And I was like, oh my gosh, anybody could read this. Mm-hmm. And they're welcome. They're invited. There's space for every single person. And it just, that simplification just was one of those moments where everything kind of broke open and it's like, oh, okay, this web is really weaving a new story.
So I'm going to circle back to more of the creation process, James, that you kind of hinted at, because I definitely am curious about that. But I want to kind of introduce everyone that's listening to both of you. So maybe, Jani, if you wanted to start by just telling us a little bit about who you are and where you are today, you know, just in this present moment, how would you describe yourself today?
Well, I feel like this is one, I'm feeling incredibly grateful to have been able to work with my son on this project and to be able to share it with the world and to be able to have conversations with really interesting people like yourself. But I would say that I have always been on a spiritual journey, even as a child. And I was raised in the Catholic tradition, and I remember going to the Armand Senior and advocating that I would be the best server, you know, at Mass. Mm-hmm. And I have a paper route, and like everybody tells me I'm the best paper person they've ever had. And I'm like, I know I could do a better job than my brothers. And I was told no at the time, you know, there was no place for a woman there. Mm-hmm. And then through my love of books and literature and exploring other ways of being in the world. And then for sure, tarot. And then ultimately my studies of yoga, which kind of blew everything open. And I'm a spiritual being in a human body and just trying to figure out how to cultivate more love for myself and for all beings.
Yeah. Beautiful. James, what about you?
I was undiagnosed bipolar, had a great time sort of in a really small high school after growing up in a smaller town. Went to college, found out I was bipolar, started having really dark thoughts, and eventually manifested three different identities to deal with it. So I made it through that, graduated 4 years flat, which was the only thing I was thinking of is just get it done, get it done, get it done. Not exactly sure where that impulse came from, but it was there. And so I get out and I have started an independent film company. And we did a lot of documentary work, actually starting with the World Trade Center Museum in New York City, which was an honor and unnerving at times. So yeah. I felt very blessed and lucky. And I moved to Denver in 2017 to just expand, grow out here in a bigger city. And 2 weeks in, I trip on some stairs and I hit my head on a metal handrail, suffering a TBI effectively until 2020, right when the pandemic started.
Wow.
Where I had what I call non-continuity. It's sort of like waking up, wondering how you got there, why you're there, who you're with, why you're there with them. And so every day was just this weird mix of no impulse control and no sense of memory. So I did what I always do, which is try and tell stories somehow. And I ended up drawing a lot every single day. I would go to the exact same coffee shop, Carbon Cafe. I've been going there for 6 years now, and I can't thank a lot of the cafe members. Actually, a lot of the body parts in the deck, the hands specifically, are from some of the baristas and bartenders and my really good friends. So I give some love there. But that process of just drawing random things led to me looking up one night, actually, at a random, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I just felt this weird instinct to draw two flowers and a bird like in the air. And that sort of sent this like little time bomb off in my head. And here I am. I've been in different kinds of rehabilitation because of the bipolar, the memory, the brain, TBI, and I'm happy. And that's still unnerving. You know, going from essentially rock bottom emotionally, the bottomest bottom you can go, to enjoying it. And so I don't know, this whole process has really just led me to feel so lucky in a sense that, like, if one person sees a piece of art or reads a word or a phrase or a mantra in this and feels less alone, or maybe like they can actually love themselves, then we've done it. Like, that's what this is about. That's all this is about.
Yeah. I'm also a frequenter of coffee shops, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And and you mentioned that you started to draw. Had you drawn before that, or was that kind of the first time you'd started to draw?
No, I had just been sketching a lot of different cartoon characters, really, and comic book characters in college, and they were very rough. And, you know, then I finally sat down and just started doing different things, told weird stories, abstract stuff, and now I get to draw what I want sometimes, and it's an incredible, incredible privilege.
I mean, that is amazing, because the art is stunning. I mean, it's so layered and, you know, I wouldn't describe it as cartoonish. You know, I would describe it really as, I mean, not that anything's wrong with cartoon, but it's like fine art drawing, you know, is how I would describe it. So that's, I think that's really amazing. And had you mentioned that you hadn't really entered the world of tarot. Janny, is that something that you had been part of already?
Yeah, I started working with actually the Mother Peace Tarot like 25 years ago, and just was really intrigued by that celebration of divine femininity and all the different shaped bodies. But I kind of put that away because I was teaching myself about yoga, and that was sort of where I went pretty deep in study. But over the last, 10 years, we've done a ritual, a family, like at New Year's, I would invite my nieces and nephews to do some ceremony, like write down something that they wanted to let go of, and we'd burn it, and then write down something they'd want to grow, and we'd burn it. And then on New Year's Day, if they wanted to pull cards, we'd pull cards. And so in that sense, James was introduced to it probably about 10 years ago. And I gave him the Thoth deck. Mm-hmm. And so that's the deck that he was working with. And my deck that I was learning on is the Rider-Waite-Smith, which is just kind of crazy. Cause like when I was, I mean, the creation of this deck is very interesting, because James drew the images, and we should talk about the first card he drew, but just in general, like he knew probably 2/3 of what the major cards were, and he knew none of the minor cards. He just drew images and gave them to me. Mm. And then I, in my mind, I'm like, well, this is coming out of the Rider-Waite-Smith kind of imagery, you know, colors, and I don't know. And so that was just kind of this crazy experience in terms of shared language, but also James, like what he brings to a reading, and like, I've sort of called him a card slinger, because he just slings it. Like he doesn't have a background, but he is so intuitively connected to tarot, I think, as I think all people can be, because it really is this beautiful tool to cultivate your own intuition, mm-hmm. and to be present, you know? So.
Yeah. Sometimes I think people that have that, that aren't connected to any certain teaching around it or any certain lineage around it, but just kind of, you know, go for it. It's fascinating what comes through, you know, for them. And I'm almost jealous of that, like beginner mindset of just, you know, not being attached to any existing interpretations or anything. But so it sounds, so yeah, let's talk about, you mentioned, Janny, the first card, which I think was the Death card. Is that right? So will you kind of talk about that a little bit?
I mean, yeah. This brings up just a really interesting, I think, philosophical conversation that we had before I drew it. I couldn't remember who I was a lot of the time, and I lost a lot of time. So what is death? Is it ego death? Was it a real death? Is it a near-death experience? Does it matter? No, it doesn't matter. I'm going to give you that answer right away. The terminology didn't, but the feeling and the idea behind this imposing narrative, it just felt like a lie. Death isn't this monstrous, terrifying behemoth. It's just part of living. And so when I drew the card, it really was a direct interpretation of just the natural cycle of flowers and seeds. To me, I guess it was my first expression of hope in terms of what might be able to happen to me. Because it was wild, you know, it's almost as nuts as having three identities. It's been a wild ride. And so it was a really big breath of fresh air, I think, for both my mom and myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you that that's definitely what I get when I look at that image. I think it's one of the most hopeful versions of death I've seen, you know, because you really focus in on that sort of seed, you know, in the center. One thing I actually am curious to ask both of you, you know, I'm not sure where this came from, but James, maybe for you, like, in this deck, there's a lot of, I've noticed a lot of highlighting of certain sections of the image. And I'm curious about that, you know, what you might want to share about the areas that you chose to almost like spotlight visually in the images.
I think the weird part is it was 85% intuition and the rest of it was literally the fact that 60 to 80 images I made were their own stories. So there's a meerkat, which is part of the Earth suit, and that was titled Meerkat Manor. And to me, it was about family. There's a zebra. It was titled Zebrat. I don't know why, but it was. Peter Rabbit was the original fool, which is the leap now in our deck. So all of these cards had their own subconscious narrative I put into them when I was just creating. And then the ability to have that narrative layered with the context of tarot, I think creates what we believe are sort of like these portals to each card, where you're not just invited, but you can't help but imprint your narrative on it over both of ours. There's no fundamentalism to it. So it is as fluid and open as you'd like it to be. That was a creative approach we pretty consciously took, which was scary, I think, for both of us.
Mm-hmm. And Jani, for you, coming from more of that lineage of tarot, I'm curious to hear what was important to you to include, you know, in the guidebook, but also just in the maybe the basic structure of the deck, the titles of the cards. And were there things that you consciously thought, I want to take that out, or I want to kind of open that up in some way? You know, how did you approach what was important to you in a quote unquote tarot deck?
Well, that's a great question. Certainly, you know, the changing of the names and the decision not to put names on the majors that happened really early on. The idea of language biasing, you know, so taking the language off, having the numbers. So if you know tarot, you know what the 13th card in the major is. You can always, and hence the guidebook can help facilitate if you don't, right? But like just having that visual image, you know, something happens to the neurons in our brain when we're looking at something visual. That's why art's so profound. Like it bypasses ingrained thought patterns, you know, that we've inherited from generations, from culture, from, you know, our schooling. So that was important and definitely different. And things like, you know, both James and I believe that there are no scary cards in the deck. And we really wanted, especially this deck, you know, comes out of a traumatic experience, but understanding that trauma doesn't have to define you and that you can make your way through it if you are really moving from your heart, which will never lie to you. You know, your thinking brain is not a very reliable narrator in my experience. And so we just thought that was important. And then the other thing that happened later on, it's like for me, you know, the suit of air and the suit of swords is probably the most challenging suit because it is about what we put in our brains and how we express those thoughts and ideas to ourselves to others. And when I was thinking about the suit of air and I was thinking about the chakras and I was like, but wait a minute, the air element is the element of the heart. And so when I started to think of the air cards as being not so much part of the brain, but when we align thinking brain with the intelligent wisdom of the heart, how everything changes, right? There's just so much more potential, so much more expansive room for growth. So that was really important for me. And then because of that, then like I ordered the cards in a non-traditional way. So I started with earth, the root chakra, water, the sacral chakra, fire, solar, and then the heart as air. And then ether being this other element we really felt called to include because of an image that James drew. Actually, it was after George Floyd was murdered, and it became our bonus card. And it was just, you know, so beyond the four elements, you know, just that thing, the quintessence of energy, the sacred cosmic self.
Mm-hmm. I love that word quintessence too, and that you use in the guidebook as well. Yeah. And that's so beautiful what you just shared about connecting the mind, or, you know, air and the heart. I love that so much. Something I've been thinking about a lot in my own practice lately too, is that our mind is in our body. You know, sometimes we separate mind and body, but our brain is literally in our body, you know, so that connection as well. And I like how that kind of helps integrate all of that. I was also curious to hear about the significance and the symbolism of the spider, and even the idea of the web. You know, this deck is called the Sacred Web. So where did that kind of come from? What is that significance?
Well, James drew the spider in the Magician card, which just blew my mind, because I was like, this is everything. It's so beautiful. And this idea that, you know, to me, that first card, so the Fool, the Leap, the Zero is the soul before it embodies, right? And then the Magician, the soul comes into the body, and we come into the world with the gifts of earth and water and fire and air. And then the journey is, how do we use those gifts, right? In service to ourselves, but really in service to the greater good. And that idea that we get to choose the narrative of our lives, we get to weave it. It's no one else can, right? And that's part of the evolution of the soul. So, and James, I've never asked you, like, where'd that spider come from? Except that James was Spider-Man multiple years in a row as a child for Halloween, and even signed his name Jake Spidey-Man at one point.
I always forget about that part. Yeah. No, I mean, spiders and me go way back. I really remember just thinking about the backs of spiders and how weird they are and oddly hairy and patterned and unnerving they can be. And so I think what really drew that card together for me was this idea of the infinity sign on the back of the spider. I mean, there's so many hidden stories inside of this deck in general. And in the guidebook, there's two whole other stories basically implied. And so this idea of interconnectedness became not just like obvious. It was at the forefront, I think, of the philosophy behind the creation. So when we're thinking about the web, you know, to me, it's also part of this vast social network that's very much omnipresent, and it's a gift and a god darn curse. Like, it sucks. It sucks how incredible it can be and how terrifying it is. So this was almost kind of like the front logo of this is a circle of flowers with a web in it. It's sort of like a life raft. It's this sidestepping the negativity of interconnectedness and really looking for the thin strands that, you know, I kind of see between things. And without it, you know, foregoing any cause and effect, there's not necessarily divine intervention with all of this. It just is all connected, whether or not you feel it. It is. It's this weird, weird echo location response. And it just permeated it. I think I spent 16 hours on the back of the book's web.
Wow.
So for a while there, I felt like I was a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But I do think that the interconnectedness is really powerful. And this idea, not just that, you know, we have agency over our own lives, that we can weave our own destiny, but just this idea that, like, if you thought that everything was connected and that everything was sacred, even the trauma, the pain, the challenge, like, then there's this different way of being with your own experience that I think is liberating in ways. And so I love this. And it's it's the ancient symbol of creation that's in so many mythologies. And it just, plus I was reading about, like, I wrote about it in the guidebook, but I was reading about, like, how a spider actually makes a web. And it is this wild thing, you know, where the spider sets the bridge line and then it moves into the center and back out again and into the center and back out again. And I just feel like that's how thoughts work. You know, they come into us and then we move them back out. And if we do it well and authentically, something beautiful is made.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Also, I've heard that it's almost like spiders think with their webs, and it gives them, it's almost like their brains are outside of their body. Speaking of brains being in the body, that they can sense, you know, these things, yes, on the outsides of the web. And, you know, it's interesting, James, when you were talking about the sort of worldwide web, quote unquote, you know, and the sort of internet connection and the way that that does connect us to people all over the world and yet seems to simultaneously separate us from everyone, you know, and even this idea of, like, being able to think with a web. I mean, you know, the web of the internet and virtual reality, it gives us access to a larger brain than ourselves. And yet it also, like, kind of keeps us, you know, separate in a way. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but it's just kind of interesting to think about, you know.
Well, so that's been a big focus, actually, of our, once we were into production and the cards were final, we've really focused on how to create a space with these tools. Like, every tool, like a hammer, can build a house, it can knock it down. We've been given these tools, and it's up to us. Well, it should be up to a lot of people to help us understand how to use them in a healthy, manageable, effect, but we are self-taught, and a lot of us don't even think about media literacy as a thing. Mm-hmm. I was taught how to read books. I was not taught how to read ads, and I see them 10 times more. So how can we take these tools of the internet, these resources of knowledge, and expand this feeling of, as we said in the beginning, like, I really just don't want people to feel as alone as they do, because you don't have to. And it sucks, because if you hear this and you feel alone, you probably won't believe me because you feel alone. And so it's this weird catch 22 that we're trying to figure out how to penetrate that narrative and offer an avenue for honesty, or at least more sincere self-reflection. So this actually spawned into what we are trying to do every week, a practice we call Vibe Checks. And it's live on Instagram. And I'll actually hand it over to Janie to just sort of give the rundown of it.
Well, Vibe Checks started with, we were doing a virtual event with an independent bookstore back in early November. And I was like, well, maybe we'll pull a card for the collective, right? Like, and James was like, oh yeah, Vibe Check. And I was like, oh, yes. So the host asked us to pull a card. And so we said, well, okay, we'll do a Vibe Check. And then, like, everybody in the audience, I think there were like 15 people. It was not overly attended, but hand raised, I want a Vibe Check. I want a Vibe Check. And it was just like the combination of James, you know, he just, you know, comes to it from this really intuitive, like, you can see him immersing himself just in the visual image. And then I have maybe a more extended knowledge about the card, you know, what that number might mean, the mantra. And it's just been this really lovely thing that we just started last weekend.
I love that, because something I think about sometimes with tarot is that it actually can be kind of an isolating practice, because the way that tarot is sort of traditionally approached is kind of oracularly, as if the, you know, the reader is channeling and the querent is receiving, you know, and it just kind of puts the spotlight onto the reader. And I'm always interested in ways that we might eventually move into more communal style of reading. You know, what that would be like, how you would read in a group. And I've experimented with it many times. Every month we kind of experiment with it as part of our Patreon group. We have these tarot hangs and, you know, we kind of pull cards and talk about them collectively. And to be honest, it's messy because it's not how tarot has been used. You know, it's not how the tool has traditionally been used. So kind of we're trying to sort of do it in an emergent style and just kind of see, you know, what comes from that. But it definitely interests me as we move into the age of Aquarius, you know, as we become really aware that we need community right now in a big, big way. How can we make tarot more communal? You know,
I love that, because I do think that there is, you know, it's a conversation, you know, like when we read, we with somebody, not the vibe checks as much, because you can't really be in conversation. But to me, that's, I feel like when I have done readings, basically both James and I do this, we just, you know, have the querent just tell us what they see and how they're feeling when they're looking at this or holding it. And when they start to talk about what they see and what they're feeling, I'm just like, that should be in the guidebook. I mean, it's just like everybody has such beautiful internal wisdom. We're just not always, you know, we don't always pause to be in conversation around something like the energy of the eights or, you know, the energy of water or whatever.
If you enjoy hearing conversations like this one, please consider supporting In Search of Tarot by becoming a member of our Patreon community. There you'll receive weekly mystic missives discussing any number of philosophical, tarological concepts, along with discounts to upcoming classes and workshops, and invitations to attend our monthly tarot hangs on Zoom. The financial support we receive through Patreon is the only way that we're able to pay our incredible guests who join us week after week to share their knowledge and life stories with all of you. We are so appreciative of our existing patrons' generous support, and we invite you to join them at patreon.com/insearchoftarot.
Now that this deck is out there in the world and you're starting to see people interact with it and post about it and probably post their interpretations of it, you know, how does that feel? Like, what is that like for you to see what people get from it and how maybe sometimes it's very, very much along the lines of what you were thinking and probably sometimes very far from what you were thinking. And along those lines, what do you see the role of the guidebook as being in that process?
That's a great question. I mean, as a not mostly successful film guy, as a writer who never necessarily got the reaction they wanted every time they wrote, this is the opposite so far, and it's creepy, and I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. But so far, every single response we've gotten has been in a pretty similar chorus of, wow, I really have never felt like I could connect to this in this manner, in such an intimate, personal manner. And that has just been wild. You know, when doing readings, it's crazy because sometimes people will literally see a different animal than what I drew. That doesn't make it false. It just makes it what is and what's the interpretation. And I think that might also be sort of a defensive maneuver on our part subconsciously, is like, if it's up for whatever interpretation as we intend it to be, there is no wrong one. So hopefully we don't mess up too bad, you know? That's sort of, I guess, one way of looking at it too.
Well, I just feel like, you know, for me, the more, well, one, I feel very fortunate that in moments when I've been working with people with this deck, I do feel like the cards are kind of singing. Like it doesn't, you know, James and I have talked about this. It's like, really, you're going to see whatever you need to see. Mm-hmm. And the truth of what you need, you already know on some level. It's just, you know, because of life or whatever, it's like, you know, it's like polishing the mirror so you can just see a little more clearly, as they say in, you know, Buddhism, or pulling the veil off your eyes, as they say in some of the yogic traditions. And I don't know, I just think like the more, I love hearing other interpretations. I just think share. I mean, how can we just, I am a student of this, you know, always. So I feel like when I see somebody else sharing their experience, it just, it expands my sense of what that card could mean. And I think there's nothing better than that, really.
Yeah. I think what I appreciate about this deck, and what I think people who maybe are more familiar with tarot, but are hungry for new ways of engaging with tarot as I am, is that this deck really does explode it in a lot of ways. You know, it really feels very far from any other system that I've, you know, encountered. And so it actually encourages me to go even further away from those traditions, you know. And kind of what actually made me think to ask this question was, the other day I pulled, you know, I've actually been working with this card in the mornings, as you're talking about pulling a card every morning, and I pulled the three in the major. And a good friend of mine now, Chanti Tacaranto Perez, who was on the podcast last season, has taught me a great new practice of letting myself just rest before I start to interpret, literally just letting my eyes just rest on the image, because I think we start to really grasp for the meaning as soon as we flip the card over, you know. And she was like, why don't you just take a beat, you know, and just wait. And so I started to do that, and I did that with this card. And what really came through, because to be honest, I haven't read through all of the meanings in the guidebook. I've read through the origins and the story and all of that, but not the meanings, because I really do want to just encounter the art like kind of fresh, you know. And and what came through, it turned out, was a little bit different than, you know, what was in the guidebook. And you actually commented. And then when you commented, I looked back at the guidebook and I was like, oh yeah, that's so interesting, you know. So it's neat how it really does, I don't know, it makes me feel free to just go even further, you know, which I just really appreciate. Because the images just, I don't know, there's something about them that they give you just enough and yet not too much, and you really are able to like fill in the blanks, you know.
That's the spaciousness we were kind of going for. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to hear somebody who's got such a deep practice to have this deck resonate with you, and to feel like there's more. Cause I always think there's more, you know. We're always scratching surfaces, and what a gift to share, just like rest. I love that so much. We need that more, you know. We're always doing, and it really, that keeps us on this horizontal plane, versus when we can just be, we connect to the source, right? And so we move into that vertical space that takes us both up and down into the wisdom of, you know, collective consciousness, and into the wisdom of the earth. And it's a really profound way to shift. And when you start to do that, there's more space, there's more peace, you know?
Yeah. And that reminds me, I recently heard Trisha Hersey, who founded the NAP ministry, talking about rest and, you know, explaining what rest really is, and saying that rest is when our mind comes into alignment, like with our body, you know? So for instance, sometimes people think of like, I'm going to go home and just like binge Netflix, you know, and that's rest, quote unquote. But she was explaining, you know, that's not really what I mean when I talk about rest. I'm really talking about, you know, being kind of aligned. And that experience of rest is very three-dimensional, as you're saying, Jani, because when I flip the card over and I rest, then my mind and my eyes and my body, like, all enter the card, you know, of a piece, you know. And it does feel like three-dimensional in that way. I want to talk a little bit about the philanthropic efforts that you're engaging in through the sale of this deck.
Yeah. So around the deck, because we don't own the deck anymore. And so we don't have any say in how we talked about it, but that was just going to get really complicated. So basically, whatever we sell on our website, and we just, you know, it's Mercury is in retrograde still, and we made this calendar for 2023, and January's got the chariot on it, and James like reimagined some of the art, but each month has a card, and we still don't have it. It's still being produced. So we're hoping to sell that. And then, so a percentage of everything that we sell on the website, we really want to support either. So for this moon phase calendar, working with a nonprofit that's doing work around supporting the earth. And so I really love 350.org. They do some amazing work. You can check them out on Charity Navigator. And then the other thing that's really important to us is supporting LGBTQIA community and mental health issues. So the Trevor Project is the space for now that we really want to support, because it's just, they've been doing really great work for a long time. So we're hoping to sell larger size prints as well, something you could put on your altar. Maybe a sacred altar cloth, some things coming in the future. So that's where our philanthropic work will happen, is through the website.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love all of that. So I'm curious to hear from both of you. You know, this deck I feel like really does contribute a lot to the future of tarot, to where I kind of see tarot headed. You know, I'm very pro expanding the imagery and moving beyond, you know, what's been done. And I would love to hear where either of you envision tarot going, you know, how you do see this contributing to that vision, and what you hope people, you know, will gain from working with this deck.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who really is still just, and I kind of am going to try and stay as open and novice as I can. Mm-hmm. For as long as I can. And in all honesty, I don't know all the cards' names from the numbers off the top of my head. First of all, I'm not great at reading since I hit my head, which is a big downside. But, mm-hmm. you know, I really, really have said this in my head a few times, is I wish my mom and I interacted with this deck instead of just children's books sometimes. Like being able to sit there and just talk about feelings or ideas rather than a narrative being completely told. Like maybe these could just be story prompts for people at night for late night stories. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I would love to come up with stories. If I saw these cards as a kid, I'd be like, that dog, the chariot card, that dog looks sad. That dog looks excited. What's going on? Why are they together? Like that to me is the audience that I really think exists, is the ones that are just looking to see themselves just like kids do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. I love that so much. What about you, Jani?
It's so funny, cause James and I hadn't talked about this, but one of the things I was thinking is like, wouldn't it be amazing, like to have this deck in a therapist's office working with young people? There's the Nine of Feathers has this cat that's, has a crown of feathers and is perched on some feathers. And the mantra for that card is intuition, but it begins with, do you know how beautiful you are? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a card. I needed that card when I was 10 and 12 and 15, you know? And so I do see that interestingly for younger people. And it's one reason why, you know, we did change some of the language to take some of the potential, you know, bias, cultural bias around death and the devil and, you know, the tower, judgment. We had to get rid of judgment. So we have the awakening. So I see that would be a dream, but also just to kind of reimagine tarot, take it outside of its divinatory history and work with it as a really transformative tool for self-reflection, self-compassion, self-forgiveness, a real, maybe even like leading to a deeper understanding of where you are in the moment and just accepting it, no judgment, right? And in that space, there's the potential for shift.
To add on to that, you know, like a big thing, I guess, to me is taking the power back from the cards to the reader, to mm-hmm. the audience, because the divine, the divinity, the divine influence, that's you. That is you. And we will hammer this point home, but you are sacred. You are the divine. The cards are your tools.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. The last question is something that I have been asking all of my guests, and it's because the show is called In Search of Tarot. And so I'm curious to know what each of you are in search of right now in your own lives. Whoever wants to start.
You know, I have been searching for so long, for so many different things when rebuilding my identity, that I've been searching for something that didn't exist, which was normalcy. And I'm at a point now where I'm searching for a way to reinforce who I am, because I think I love who I am now. I really think I do. And so how can I reinforce that in my day to day? And, you know, right now it's doing the bed, cleaning the house, just a few small things to try and give a sense of, I don't know, something. So I don't think I answered it very well, but that's sort of where I'm at, is just searching for that sense of balance and reinforcement.
No, that's gorgeous. What about you, Jani?
Well, actually, on a tangible, I'm starting level one foundations astrology class this Saturday with Heidi Rose Robbins of the Radiance Project.
And amazing. Really,
so I would like to deepen my facility around that language. And so I'm always searching for ways to see the connectedness of all things, and in seeing that the beauty, the magic of the natural world, and you know, our own beauty reflected back in that, and this idea that there is really no separation. And so just always in search of practices that will keep me in a place of peace.
So I want to let each of you tell the listeners how they can find you and follow your work, and definitely how they can purchase the deck. So maybe Jani, do you want to start?
Sure. So I always suggest going to your local independent bookstore, because those are magical places. And we are really, we would be so sad if we didn't have those places to go to.
Yes.
That being said, you can Google it and you'll find other larger spaces where you can purchase it. Our Instagram is The Sacred Web Tarot.
Lovely. And James,
where can people find you?
Everybody can find me and my upcoming sort of show that I'm trying to put together about, it's called The Fragility of Hope right now, and it's about anatomy and your brain and your skull. There is a lot of that. I think you're really going to like some of it, Nick.
Yeah.
But let's focus on a vibe check. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I've been shuffling. I've been channeling some energy, and I was not surprised when I pulled this bad Larry out.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Do you want to tell the listeners what it is and kind of describe the image?
So it's the Ace of Fire. So it's this incredible, a beautiful wand, an infinity symbol. And James, what's the animal?
It's a lion.
Yeah.
No, it's a tiger.
It's a tiger.
It's a tiger.
Thank you. And the mantra for this card is passion, but it's the kind of passion that elevates the soul, right? It's a passion that you're the fire within you, right, is the guiding light. It's the beginning of the journey into the full expression of that light.
I see work ethic of infinite proportions that has been put in to shape the community and the world around you. And I think this card is saying it's okay to lay down and just admire it. You know, a little Lion King Simba Mufasa, just look over your kingdom, the place you live, and take some pride in it, man. You did a lot. That's cool.
What's interesting about that is the infinity symbol is there, right? If you, yeah. So when I listen to both of your interpretations, I feel like I sense that because, you know, Jani, you were sort of, your interpretation was a bit more at the beginning. And then James, you were talking about kind of reflecting on what's happened and like, and there it kind of all is. And it's interesting to think of that being all present in the beginning, like the one or the ace or, you know, that, I don't know. That's really beautiful when it's all kind of, when our powers combine, you know, that's, I love that.
I love it.
No, that's the best part about just being asked to talk to individuals like you is creating this new web, a new community. And man, it just feels so lucky to be able to talk to you guys. And Nick, this has been awesome. Thank you so much. What fantastic questions too. They made me think. I really liked them.
Amazing. Yeah, no, thanks to both of you and everyone, please go purchase this deck. You will not be sorry. It is incredible. And what an amazing, you know, journey watching you both make it. And just thank you so much for the beautiful work that you've gifted us with, honestly.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you so much, Nick.
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_, that's BIRDGERHL_, and you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? Email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.